All right. Well, good morning. So we have Britt and Jim and I talked on Tuesday and decided that since there were so many questions and so much behind the issues that we were talking about last week, that we'd continue this week. And I have handed out a document that I wrote after our conversation that Britt, did you email it to the others?
You did it with me.
I didn't get it.
Well, then I did not.
Well, then Britt and I have colluded, and we agree on the document that was handed out. But I don't think that there would be anything in here that any of the others would disagree with necessarily. I want to take a few minutes to explain something more carefully that we didn't really have time to explain last week. And that is, last week we talked about how God's sovereignty means that He is in control of everything. Everything that takes place because He's working it according to the counsel of His will. And the phrase, He's working all things according to the counsel of His will, it doesn't mean that He allows them to happen. It doesn't mean that He's a stander-by as He just watches these things unfold, or that He looks into the future and sees what's going to happen and then makes His plans accordingly. What it means is that He's actively causing. That's what it means to work. You're bringing about an effect through an effort of some kind. He's actively affecting the things that happen. And not just some of them, but all things according to the counsel of His will. And so the question that always comes is, how then could man have free will? And the answer is that he really doesn't. The answer is that he couldn't have free will, because as we addressed last week, if man has completely free will, then God doesn't. Because God is limited by the free will of man. He can't change our decisions that we make in our own freedom. That means He can't cause us to do the things that He purposes for us to do. So, at some level, human free will is completely incompatible with divine sovereignty. But at another level, God can choose and does choose to give limited freedoms to man. But here's the important thing to note, and I think of it like this. This is an imperfect illustration, but imagine you have a field that's fenced in, and imagine you have a horse.
This is going to be good.
Hey, that looks like mine. Oh, wow.
That's an animal crack.
Well, that's a really full tail. Yeah, I tried to be an artist and that didn't work out, so I went to seminary. But imagine this horse in this field, and he's got this fence around him, so he can't cross the fence. Now, if you ask the horse, are you free? The horse might say, yeah, I'm free to do whatever I want. He might say, there's a pit over here, and I was free to throw my brother in that pit and sell him to some slave traders. But really, is the horse free? No, because the horse can only do that which he can accomplish with inside of these constraints of this fence. And God has sovereignly ordained offense. That's an imperfect, all illustrations are going to be imperfect to describe this. But God has put a fence around everything. He's causing everything to work according to the counsel of His will. And so our freedom is only within inside the constraints that God provides. That means we're only free to do the will of God. And so that is how Genesis 50 verse 20, where do we get that concept from the Bible? It's from places like Genesis 50, verse 20, where Joseph says to his brothers, what you intended for evil, God intended for good, to save many alive. such that his brothers had intentions. They decided to go over here to this pit. They decided to throw Joseph in there. And those things that they did out of their own intent were accomplishing the will of God. To get Joseph in that pit, to get him to those slave traders, to get him to Egypt so that he might save many alive from the famine. And so the things that they did of their own intent were bringing about the perfect will of God. What God had intended. And that's the way it always and only works. The free will of man, if you want to use that terminology, is only free within the constraints of divine sovereignty to do what the will of God has sovereignly ordained that should be done. And so, I have... what we talked about, Jim and Britt and I, was to take a few moments to explain what was left off from last week, what seemed to be causing the most confusion, which was this concept, and to leave the rest of the time for any questions that might arise. And Britt has joined us today, and Chris and Jim are here to help with the questions. And there's no disagreements here. Charlie astutely pointed out last week that it seemed that Britt and I were not talking along the same lines. And that's good conversation to have, because if it looks like we're not talking along the same lines, then there's a real problem there. Because we tend to be in agreement. And I think there was vocabulary usage that when we talked about it, you know, we completely agree. And the things on this document, Britt agrees with what, 25% of it?
22.
No, from what he told me, he agrees with all of it. So if you want to know what would be the statements made about divine sovereignty and human freedom, this would be the document to answer those questions. But I'll open it up now for any discussion at all to get us started.
Are you going to walk through the statement, Bud?
You think?
Yeah, I think. Because I haven't seen it.
Well.
I'm not that fast of a reader yet.
All right. Well, the first part are just the definitions. So I won't walk through those, because those are to put our definitions in context of the document. Not every usage of these words would have the same definition. But here in this document, for example, the word all, it means everything without exception. Everything that exists or comes to pass in the universe without exception. Not every time we use the word all. I could say all of us, and I don't mean every person in humanity, I mean all the people in this room, but that's not the sort of usage that I'm using the words all, any, or every in this document. That's the most important distinction to make. But number one, the first statement, is that in eternity past, God sovereignly planned and purposed all things to come to pass according to his will. Now that is focusing on the reality that, as you hear in the Bible, it's usually described as before the foundation of the world. That the things that God purposes, they don't come as a result of things that he sees in the world. They come because he planned it that way before the foundation of the world. He's creating the world to go along with the plans that he had before it was ever even conceived at creation. And God has, therefore, a purpose behind all that has been made. If God has created a world to fulfill his plans and purposes, that means there's nothing that we can do or see that exists in the universe that doesn't have a purpose. Because its creator has a plan and purpose for all things that he has made. B, nothing exists or occurs contrary to the sovereign plan and purpose of God. So if it's true that before creation, God had already planned and purposed all that would come to pass in the universe, then nothing that comes to pass in the universe happens apart from His plan. We'll get into why that is in the next statement, but you have to understand, there's no surprises out there for God. It comes to pass exactly as He planned it. And so see, God may or may not choose to reveal His plans and purposes directly to man, but this does not negate the reality that He does have a plan and purpose for all things without exception. Sometimes we don't know why God planned certain things the way He did. Sometimes we do. Sometimes it's clear, as in the case with Joseph selling his brothers, because the Bible explains what was on God's mind. But most of the time, more often than not, we might not know. We might not know why the tornado came through. But we know that God is sovereign over the storms. Look at how Jesus calmed the raging sea when the disciples thought that they would drown. With just a word. And there's no tornado. There's no hurricane. There's no volcano. There's no natural event that occurs or unnatural event that occurs that's outside of His plan. Nothing happens contrary to the will of God. And we may not know why. We may not have that answer. And we can't be trying to find the answer to every situation, because if Scripture doesn't say, then we don't have many ways of knowing. And so the point is not that we should know all of God's plans and purposes, but the point is that we should know that everything that happens, happens because He's planned and purposed it. And we must trust that His plan is for ultimate good. Statement 2 on the document says, God effectively ordains and causes all His sovereign plans and purposes to come to pass. He effectively ordains and causes. Now I'm using both of those words there to clear up any confusion. That ordains, that's a sovereign decree, but causes is to effect an action. And God does both of those. He decrees that things happen, but not only does He decree that they happen, He effects the things that happen to cause them, to work them according to the counsel of His will. He doesn't just decree that things happen and then hope that it works out that way. He decrees that things happen and He makes sure it works out that way by causing it to. That means that at the cross, Judas, who betrayed Jesus, the Romans who nailed Him to the tree and beat Him with the whips and crushed the crown of thorns into His head, and the Jews who cried, "Crucify Him," even though they knew that He was an innocent man, not worthy of death, and Pilate, who washed his hands of Him, and Herod, who mocked Him, all of those, they were accomplishing what was scripted for them in the Psalms. They were accomplishing the very will of God. There was no other outcome. In that sense, they weren't free to say, "No, we've decided not to crucify the Lord of glory." They weren't free to do that. There was no other outcome that could have came at the cross, because God's sovereign plan and purpose was that they would crucify Jesus in that manner by those unfolding events, starting with His betrayal. There's no other outcome that would have ever been possible, because God is not only saying, "This is what I want to happen," we can do that, but He's also causing it to happen that way. He's working everything according to the counsel of His will, so that nothing happens apart from what He wants to happen. He wills it and He causes it. That's what it means that He effectively ordains and causes all of His sovereign plans and purposes to come to pass. God's ordained decrees are effective without fail because He's also omnipotent to cause them to come to pass. Were there no omnipotence within God, as we've talked about in this study through this summer, were there no omnipotence, he couldn't cause them to come to pass. But he has the power to do everything he wants to do. And he uses that power to make sure that all his plans and purposes come to pass. Nothing can in any way hinder, delay, change, or stop God's decreed will. You can't decide, I'm going to jump over the fence. You can't decide, I'm going to do the opposite of what God has decreed. Now therein lies another distinction that we have to make. Because God's decreed will, I use that terminology, is different from his will of desire. And what I mean by that is, he's given a lot of commands in the Bible that are the will of God. He's told us not to have any false gods before him. He's told us not to covet. He's told us to love the Lord our God and love our neighbor as ourselves. He's told us to do all these things, and those are his will. In the one sense, that's the things that he's commanded that we do. That's what he desires. But he hasn't decreed that we do all of those things. There's the difference. Because he's told us what his character is like, and he's given us commands that show us how to live like him. But that's his will. That's what he desires to happen. But it's a will of desire, not a will of decree. He's left it so that we can break those. And in a sense, we've broken his will. We've not done what he wants us to do. But at the same time, we haven't broken his decreed will. Those are the two categories of God's will that it's so important that you have. Otherwise, you're going to look at the Bible and you're going to say, well, he commanded this to happen and these people did the opposite. Therefore, they didn't do his will. No. They didn't do his will of command, his will of desire. But they did, even in breaking his commands, they accomplished his decreed will.
So what? They didn't really have a choice. They didn't. Basically, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they don't. Let me come back to that. There's the choice, I would say, is human freedom does exist in a limited capacity. So there is a choice, but the choice that man makes is to disobey God. There's none righteous, no, not one. So any righteousness that's found in man is only there because God put it there. So if there's ever a man who obeys the commands of God, then he's obedient only because God has put obedience in his heart. So someone who disobeys God is doing what human sinful nature directs us to do. In our freedom, left to ourselves, we rebel against God. The only way we don't rebel against God is by him coming in and putting a stop to that rebellion through conversion. And so when I say that someone breaks his command, the distinction I'm trying to make is that God can, it's totally compatible with his sovereignty that he would decree one thing and desire another. That's how it can be true.
Can you provide an example of that?
I'm about to provide one. I'm about to provide several. That's how it can be true that Scripture could say in 2 Peter that God desires that all men be saved. But he didn't decree it. He desires it. He doesn't desire to see someone go to hell in the same way that you don't desire to see your children spanked. But he doesn't decree that. Or, in the most significant example is always of God's sovereignty and so many other things in the Bible is always the cross. Do you think that God desired to see his son tortured to death on the cross? What kind of father would desire that? He didn't desire that. It didn't bring him pleasure in the suffering on the cross. But he decreed it to happen. Those are not incompatible. Even as humans, we can understand that we can desire one thing, but we know that we have to do something different, something that we don't desire for better plans and purposes. Because if we did everything that we desired, things would work out very badly. Nobody desires to spank their children. If you don't ever spank your children, things are going to work out very badly for your children. And God is no different. He can desire things that he does not decree. And that's completely compatible, even when you think of it in terms of human nature. Any questions there?
So we have the decree and covenant with Jacob that he should inherit his father's grandfather's land. It was the desire of God that he go follow Esau, and he said, "No, I'm going to take off and live outside of Shechem." So is that decree versus desire?
Now say that. I didn't
remember,
hear.
He just wrestled with God,
mm-hmm.
seen the angels and everything else. I think that'd be pretty raw in there. And he's shaken like a leaf that his brother's going to kill him. They meet, everything's happy. He's supposed to go to what, Bethel? Supposed to follow Esau and meet up with him in the land of his father, and instead he goes off to Shechem. So is that desire? He desired to go.
Well, here's
said no and off he went.
Here's an important thing to note. A lot of people confuse will of decree with will of desire. And a lot of people, even in life, try to find what is God's will for my life. But you know what God's will is by what happens. So if God commands one thing and the opposite happens, then you know that the command was desire and what happened was his will, because all things work according to his will. So how do you know what the will of God is, what the decreed will of God is? How do you know his eternal plans and purposes? You know it by what happens. How do you know that you married the person that God willed from eternity past for you to marry? How do you know you didn't marry the wrong person? Well, you know it by looking at who you married. Because God's will is always accomplished. It's not that we can take his decreed will and we can mess it up. We can marry the wrong person. We can go the wrong way. We can take the wrong turn. No, if you take the wrong turn and you get lost, it's because he decreed it from eternity past that you would go that way. And whoever you encounter in that wrong turn might be how he intended to save that person, by leading you on a wrong turn. So many examples could be made of how our mistakes can work out for his good purposes. But when we see things happen in the universe, it's because God decreed them to happen. When we see that he's commanded one thing and it doesn't happen, we know that might have been what he desired, but the person did the opposite. But even in breaking his commands, we can fulfill his decreed will. And so, and we're going to talk more extensively about...
So how do you know the difference? I mean, you can rationalize anything. You know, you can be going along, fat, dumb, and happy, and thinking you're doing everything that you believe that the Lord intended you to do, to get to a certain point in your life and realize, you know, if I'd have turned left back there in 1966 instead of right, my life would have been totally different. How do you know? I guess you know at the end, right?
Well, it's true that if you had turned left back there in 1966, your life probably would have been different. But you know, because you turned right instead of left, that God purposed from...
Well, you know what it is. You don't know what it would have been. And I'm not questioning that. I understand that. But in the desire, knowing the decree of God, and the desire of God, we've got the decree of God written down for us.
Or maybe, not...
He wrote it down. So now it's all up to us to understand it and affect it in our lives. Now his desire for us personally to get to that decree seems to be the part that, like Britt said Wednesday, will send us to the mental institution.
Well, I think...
Try to understand it. It is what it is.
Well, and just to throw in...
Go ahead.
There, another couple of terms instead of decree and desire would be prescriptive and descriptive will of God. The prescriptive will is what God prescribes that we do.
Right.
The descriptive will describes what actually happens.
What we did.
What we did. And we know it looking back. When we look at the future, there are certain things, and I've used one example numerous times, I'm not going to use again, but we know certain things we are not supposed to do. And we don't have to question whether or not we should do those things, because God said, don't do it. But there are a lot of other things, descriptive will, that God hasn't prescribed one way or the other. You know, whether again we eat a steak or whether we have a hamburger, that's, or in the case of some of your vegetarians, you know, just vegetable. But, you know, when you have those differences, those things aren't prescribed. What we find later on, the descriptive will is what we actually ate. We are responsible to do or not do the things that he has prescribed. And but the other things...
That's an excellent example between the steak and the vegetarian. God gave us incisors for a purpose. And they're not the vegetables. It's the ribbon meat all over. So are we, if we go vegetarians, going against the desire of God or the decree of God?
No, because again, the decree, what he's talking about with the decree here, what he's talking about is what actually happens. That would be the descriptive will, what actually takes place. Whereas the prescriptive is the desire, which he says, this is what you want to do or what you're not to do. This is what I want for you to do or what I want you not to do. And so, again, those things he spells out for us. But whether or not we use our incisors to eat vegetables or to eat meat, that he hasn't told us, you know, thou shalt eat only meat. I mean, that. So we have the option to eat vegetables or eat meat. But again, that's not prescribed. That's not something that he's told us that we can or can't do. Does that help?
Sure.
So, Jim.
If there's not a distinction between decree and desire, as you said, in Romans 8:28 could mean nothing. Mm-hmm. All things work together for the good. Mm-hmm. How could that happen if God has not decreed it?
Yeah. So even if you take your example a little bit farther, even if you make a decision that's wrong based on what God has prescribed, if God has said, do not drop erasers on the floor, and I drop it, then I have broken his desire will. But if it crushes a spider that would have otherwise come and bit me and killed me, then it accomplished, even my mistake, even my error, even my failure, accomplished God's will. His will of decree, or his will of description, is that the term you used?
Good words. So the non-believer would call that coincidence. Yes.
But there are,
so
no,
there are no coincidences.
There are no coincidences with God. So you know, how do you know what God's plan was? That goes back to my point. You know it was God's plan for me to mess up and drop that eraser because it happened. That doesn't mean that we should try to do bad things so that God can use our mistakes for his glory, but that means that he does use every mistake for his glory. So even if we fail to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord, He still uses those things. So that's how he...
So there's intended and unintended consequence to decisions we make, such as the unintended consequence of dropping that eraser. Now you got to bend over and pick it up.
Right. Or I can call you up here to do it.
That's the other unintended consequence. Or the intended consequence is you hit the spike.
Well, all consequences are intended by God. But there are unintended consequences from our perspective. So nothing's unintended. God intended for it to hit the spider. I didn't intend for it to hit the spider. I didn't even know that there was a spider there. Wouldn't it be crazy if I picked that up and there was a black widow under it? But... So... Anything else there? I don't want to move on prematurely.
Oh, you've got three and four.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Number three, God sovereignly chose to give limited freedom to man. That's, man intends to do things only within what God has sovereignly decreed would happen. The freedom of man can never hinder, delay, change, or stop the decreed will of God. You can't jump the fence. You can only do in your freedom. God has given you the freedom to do only what He wants to do. What His decreed will has decreed from eternity past that would happen. God's sovereign plans and purposes are never nor in any way contingent on any choices that man might make in his freedom. A lot of people that I know want to say that God plans and purposes things based on what He foreknows we will do. And that's not what's happening at all. God plans and purposes, and any freedom that He might choose to give to man is within what He's planned and purposed. It's not the other way around. It's not that He sees what we're going to do. It's not that He saw that Joseph's brothers were going to put him in the pit, and he tried to figure out a way to work that out for good. It's that He plans and purposes all things according to the counsel of His will, and the things that we do are within that will. He doesn't look and see what we're going to do and, in a way, consult us. He plans and purposes, and then we do according to those plans. And the two implications of that are that man does not truly have free will. Rather, man has certain limited freedoms only within the constraints of divine sovereignty. And God's plans and purposes are not determined by the future actions of man. Rather, the future actions of man are determined by God's plans and purposes. If someone says that God predestines only based on what He foreknows will happen, then they're saying that His predestining work of God is based on foreknowledge. And I'm saying that God foreknows anything that He knows what's going to happen in the future. He knows that it's going to happen because He predestined it to happen, because He planned it. He doesn't plan according to what He knows. He knows because of what He planned. I think that makes a whole lot more sense, and I think it's a whole lot more compatible with Scripture. And the last statement, sin, evil, and suffering are necessary for God's plans and purposes to come to pass. Sin, evil, and suffering are necessary. God has planned and purposed things in the universe, like the cross, like the betrayal of Joseph. And sin, evil, and suffering was necessary for God's plans and purposes to come to pass. That means that God can ordain that sin happen without sinning. If you don't have a category for that, then I don't know what you're going to do with the cross. I don't know what you're going to do with the story of Joseph. I don't know what you're going to do with so many things that happen in the Bible and so many things that happen in life. But God can decree, it can be part of His purpose that He has planned, that He causes to happen. And sin, evil, and suffering is necessary for it to come to pass. But even so, it's also true that all God's purposes are ultimately good. He works all things for the good for those who love Him, who are called according to His purpose. Even the things that He does that do necessitate sin, evil, and suffering, like the murder of Jesus on the cross, it's for good purposes. As we've already said, we don't always know what those good purposes are. We will one day, I trust, but in this life, we don't always know. We don't always know why Joe's house was ripped out of the ground by a tornado and all of his family died. Job is a prime example. He didn't know why it was happening, but he still trusted God. And eventually, God worked all things out for good. And finally, God is never guilty of sin because He never commits sinful acts. Rather, He uses the sinful actions of man to accomplish His good purposes. The fact that God can use sin, evil, and suffering for His good purposes doesn't mean that He Himself is a sinner. It doesn't mean that He Himself is doing evil. It doesn't even mean that He Himself created evil, because I don't believe that evil is something that necessarily has to be created, just like light and darkness. Darkness, if God is light and there is no darkness in Him at all, by the nature of God being light, He doesn't have to create darkness. It's just the opposite of God. It's just the opposite of light. And I think that evil is the same way. You don't have to create the opposite of good. It just exists by nature of there being something that is good. There's something that is not good. There's something that is evil. So God didn't have to create evil. We don't have to struggle with that dilemma. And God is never guilty of sin. God is not, as James 1 says, God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does He tempt anyone. For temptation comes when man is enticed and drug away by his own desires. What that means is God doesn't have those desires of the flesh that drag us into sin. God is not tempted in that way. He's not drug into sin by anything evil in Himself. He's perfectly good. There's nothing evil within God that drags Him away into sin. He's not even tempted in that way. And He doesn't tempt anyone, meaning He doesn't implant within us those evil desires that lure and drag us into sin. That's there by our human nature, our fallen status, because we are by nature sinners. We already have those evil desires implanted within us. And the things that we're going to do are always and only going to be in rebellion against God. And so, it can be true that God can use that rebellion and even plan and purpose that rebellion and never commit sin. And always and only plan and purpose all things for the good for those who love Him, who are called according to His purpose. That's ultimate good. Not temporal good. That's not good that we might see in this life. That's good for eternity. Let's pray. Father, thank You for being a God who is in control of everything we do, everything we say, everything we see, everything that happens, every fly that lands on our hamburger, every spider that's crushed by a falling eraser. You have a plan and a purpose behind all those things, and it's unfathomable for us because we can't even know all that You plan and purpose. And may we trust that Your plans and Your purposes are good, even when we don't see it, even when it doesn't look good from our perspective. May we trust that You know exactly what You're doing. It's in Your precious name I pray. Amen. I'll be back next week, Lord willing. If not, then Chris will be here.